arms. Minnie held up the compact for Aru to see. Move. Aru spelled out the right response in her head, and then shouted it as they walked through the door.
Edur!
Inside the room, a kind-eyed man with a bulbous nose sat at a desk. He reminded Aru a little bit of her school principal at Augustus Day. Mr. Cobb sometimes subbed for their social studies teacher, and he always managed to slip in a story about the Vietnam War, even when their class unit was on ancient civilizations. The man stared at them. On his desk, 7 miniature versions of himself ran back and forth, carrying pens and stacks of paper. They argued among themselves.
"Report, please," said the man. "You should have received one upon expiration."
Minnie inhaled sharply. "Dad?" The 7 miniature men stopped running and stared at Minnie. He was unfazed.
"You don't have my nose, so I don't think so," he said. "Plus, I think one of my wives would have told me. But there is an ultimate test."
He coughed loudly.
"Yesterday, I bought eggs at a human grocery store. The cashier asked me if I wanted them in a separate bag. I told her, 'No, leave them in their shells.'"
Minnie blinked. Aru felt a rush of pity for this man's children. The man sniffed.
"Nothing? Not even a smile? Well, then that settles it. All my offspring have my nose and sense of humor."
He chuckled.
"I must say, though, that's a rather clever ploy to get out of death, claiming to be my child."
He turned to one of his tiny selves.
"Write that one down for my memoir."
Then he turned back to Aru and Minnie.
"Now, how about those records?"
"We don't have any," said Aru.
"Of course you do. You're dead, aren't you?"
"Well, about that," said Minnie. She was waving her hand, ready to explain their strange situation, when the compact fell from her palm and landed on the desk with a loud thunk. The man leaned over to take a look. All 7 miniature versions of him dropped what they were holding and raced to the compact. Aru scanned the table and saw a small brass plaque that read, "Chitragupta." There was also a mug that read, "14 World's Best Dad." Behind him were bookcases and file cabinets and mountains upon mountains of paperwork. It took a moment for Aru to remember Chitragupta from the stories. He was the one who kept a record of everything a soul had ever done, both good and bad. This was why karma mattered. Her mom used to say, "Chitragupta will see and write down everything." Aru wasn't sure she believed in karma. "What goes around comes around" sounded suspiciously convenient to her. But the one time she'd said, "Karma isn't real," she'd walked outside and a bird had pooped on her head. So who knew?
"Where did you get the mirror, child?"
asked Chitragupta. Most adults would have gone straight to accusing a kid of stealing. But not Chitragupta. Aru liked that.
"It was given to me during the claiming."
"The claiming? Wait, the claiming?"
Chitragupta's eyes widened.
"I don't think there's been a claiming since..."
He rose from his chair.
"Bring up the records!"
The room spun into chaos. Aru and Minnie stepped back as the 7 miniature versions of Chitragupta jumped onto him and disappeared. He slumped back into his chair, and his eyes glazed over. Then they flashed and crackled, and words streamed across his gaze. When the text finished scrolling, he leaned forward again. Tears shone in his eyes.
"Never been a girl before," he said, looking between Minnie and Aru. "How unusual."
Aru braced herself, waiting to hear the usual lines that they couldn't possibly be heroes, or that they were too weak, too young, or too... girly.
"And how refreshing," he said.
His shirt changed to say,
This is what a feminist looks like.
Upend the patriarchy. R-E-S-P-E-C-T, etc., etc. And you got past ache and dough, too. Well done, well done.
Minnie brightened. So can you help us? We need to wake up the celestial weapons, and then we have to go to the pool of the past to find out how to stop the sleeper from ending time forever.
Oh, that does sound dire,
said Chitragupta. He reached for his mug and sipped from it.
Sadly, I'm not allowed to help. Not even the Dharma Raja could help you, little ones.
Minnie turned red. Does he know we're here? She asked.
Undoubtedly.
Doesn't he want to, I don't know, meet me? At this, Chitragupta's face softened.
Oh, child, I'm sure he does. But the truth is, he will eventually meet you one way or another. Your soul is what matters. It is the immortal thing, not the body. The gods no longer get involved with mortal affairs.
Can't you make an exception? Asked Aru.
If I could, do you not think I would have helped the heroes who came before you? Bright, shining things they were, like living stars. I can only do for you what I did for them.
And that is? Chitragupta sighed. He spread out his hands. Two ivory-colored tokens, flat squares with screens like tiny iPhones, appeared on the table.
I wish there were more, but you two simply haven't lived long enough.
Aru picked up one of the tokens. She saw little images of herself flashing on its surface. In one, she was holding open the door for a young woman carrying a stack of books. In another, she was washing the dishes in the apartment. In the next, she was pulling a blanket over her sleeping mother. What are these? Asked Minnie.
Good karma, said Chitragupta. They should allow you to get past at least some of the things buried within these halls. You see, there are many rooms in the Kingdom of Death, many places you may enter but not exit. All I can tell you is that you must follow the signs and find your own way. The celestial weapons are kept near the Pool of Reincarnation. Right next to the Pool of Reincarnation is where you will find the Pool of the Past.
There's only one way to get to them? Asked Aru. She was thinking about the handy trick Boo had shown them, where all they had to do to go somewhere was reach for a place with intention. Thinking about Boo made her heart tighten. Was he okay? She hoped he was somewhere safe, blissfully asleep. Deep down, however, she feared that wasn't the case.
Oh, I don't know about that. There are hundreds of ways, some paved, some pebbled, some pockmarked.
One of Chitragupta's miniature selves hopped onto his shoulder, climbed onto his face, and scratched his nose while he spoke. Aru tried not to let her eyebrows soar up her forehead.
Even I do not know what you will find in the halls of death, said Chitragupta. Things and places move through death differently than humans do. Things that were once real are now mere stories in this kingdom. Forgotten things endure their own death, for they are never reincarnated into something new.
Forgotten things? Aru wanted to believe this meant they would find objects like deflated basketballs, mismatched socks or bobby pins, or that pen you could have sworn you put into the pocket of your backpack, but wasn't there when you went to look for it. But she knew that was wishful thinking. Minnie was looking beyond both of them to the door behind Chitragupta. It was made of polished onyx. When was the last claiming? Asked Minnie.
Just before World War II.
That can't be right, Aru said. Boo mentioned something about the last Pandava brother being a yoga teacher or something.
Oh, him, said Chitragupta.
He rolled his eyes.
Couldn't get that man to leave all the other dead people alone. He kept insisting on leading everyone through breathing exercises. made some people want to die all over again, which is saying something. He was a latent Pandava. His divine powers were hidden, even to him. And there were no calamities that forced his inner godhood to awaken. Sometimes you don't even know how special you might be. Sometimes it takes moments of horror or happiness to, if you will, unleash that knowledge.
So the last ones in World War II, did they make it through the Kingdom of Death and get to the Celestial Weapons?
Chitragupta sighed and leaned back in his chair. Even though he looked like a young man, there was something very old and tired in his eyes. His smile was sad when he said,
"We had a war, didn't we?"
24. Dare, disturb, deign. Chitragupta refused to send them off without any food.
"I think I might be your uncle," he said, whizzing about the office. "Or at the very least, we all share some divine something or other. I do hope you make it back. I never even had a chance to regale you with my stories or essays. Did I tell you about that time I interviewed a snail? You wouldn't believe how fast he could talk. Downright speedy."
From a file drawer, he brought out a box of cookies. He opened it and offered one to Minnie, who sniffed it.
"Why does this smell like books?"
"Ah, they're wisdom cookies. I've made these from scratch before. The secret is to allow the books to hit room temperature before mixing them. Cold writing doesn't sit well in the mind."
Sure.
"Save it for later," said Chitragupta, plucking the cookie from Minnie's hand and returning it to the box.
His outfit had changed again. Now he was wearing an apron that said, "Do not kiss the cook. You have germs.
And don't eat them all at once. That might leave you feeling a little queasy. Or empty."
"Thanks, uncle," said Minnie.
"And you don't want to get dehydrated or..."
"You could die," said Minnie and Chitragupta at the same time.
They looked at each other with an expression that so clearly said, "We must be related," that Aru wanted to knock her forehead against the door, repeatedly.
"Yeah, thanks, uncle," said Aru.
Chitragupta patted both of them on the head and handed them two small thimblefuls of a bright orange liquid. It looked like a captured flame.
"So much for not being dehydrated. This couldn't even be called a full sip."
But Aru swallowed it dutifully.
A warm glow spread through her bones. Her throat no longer felt dusty. Between the sip of whatever this was and one of the fancy spring petit fours from the Court of the Seasons, Aru felt clear-headed and sharp-eyed.
"The dead have a tendency to leave us parched and tired. Watered-down soma always does the trick."
"Soma?" repeated Minnie. "As in the drink of the gods?"
"Yes, which is why it needs to be watered down. Undiluted, it can be deadly, even to demigods."
"Too bad it can't make us immortal," said Aru.
"Then we'd definitely get through the halls of death alive."
Chitragupta eyed her shrewdly.
"You must be the daughter of Indra."
Aru raised her eyebrows.
"What makes you say that?"
"Did you know that Indra's Pandava son Arjuna was one of the greatest warriors who ever lived?"
Defensiveness prickled through Aru.
"Just because Arjuna was an amazing warrior and we have the same soul doesn't actually mean that I'm a great warrior too, you know."
"Aru!" hissed Minnie. "Sorry," she bit out. But she wasn't, and she was sure Chitragupta knew. He didn't get mad, though. Instead, he smiled.
"What made Arjuna great wasn't his strength or his valor, but the way he chose to see the world around him. He looked around, questioned, and doubted. You, too, are perceptive, Arusha. What you do with those perceptions is up to you."
The hairs on Aru's arm lifted. For a moment she thought of the giant library in the night bazaar, and the book with her name on it. Maybe her imagination wasn't just something that would keep landing her in trouble. Maybe it could actually help her save people. Chitragupta looked away from her and clapped twice.
All right, then. Off you go.
Minnie and Aru reached for the door at the same time that Chitragupta called out,
Wait!
What? Asked Aru. It wasn't that she was particularly anxious to embark on a journey of near certain doom, but there was always just one more thing when it came to Indian aunties and uncles. She experienced this whenever her mother dragged her to parties. The relatives would start saying goodbye in the living room, then spend another hour saying goodbye at the door. It was inevitably how they spent half the visit. If they didn't leave now, they were probably never going to leave.
Just this, said Chitragupta.
He held out his hand. A slim ballpoint pen lay in his palm.
What does it do? Asked Minnie.
What do you think it does? Asked Chitragupta. It's a pen. It writes.
Oh, thanks, said Minnie.
Don't mention it. I cannot help you in defeating the sleeper, but perhaps this will come in handy at some point. Wherever you are and whatever you write on, I will get the message, and if it is within my means, I will answer.
With a final farewell, they were off. The moment the door closed behind them, all of Aru's old fears raced back to her.
I like him, said Minnie.
Of course you do. You guys are practically the same person.
The halls of death unfurled like a maze before them and actually grew. Colors gathered and stretched into passageways. The signs cropped up shortly after that. To dare. To disturb. To deign. An arrow was attached to each sign. Dare pointed right and down a blue corridor. Disturb pointed left and down a red corridor. Deign pointed up and into nothing. Beneath them, the floor was polished marble, and the ceiling was a strange, twisting river of names that Aru imagined belonged to the dead.
Red pill or blue pill, said Aru, in her best imitation of Morpheus.
What pill? It's a red road or blue road, Aru.
I know that. I'm quoting the Matrix.
Minnie blinked.
But a matrix has nothing to do with color. In mathematics, a matrix is a rectangular array of...
Aru groaned.
Minnie, you're killing me. Don't you ever watch old movies?
She shook her head and pointed ahead.
Which way should we go? Why don't they have signs that say, weapons of mass celestial destruction, and then everything else is actually a trap? That would be helpful.
Minnie laughed.
What if we went with dare?
Why?
Because it's like, we're daring to save time?
Are we, though? Or are we just panicking around and trying to save what we like? And the people we love, thought Aru with a pang.
That doesn't sound very heroic, said Minnie.
What about disturb? Asked Aru.
Like we're disturbing the natural order of things.
I don't think that's right, said Minnie. That makes it seem like we're doing something wrong, and we're not.
Fine.
What does Dane mean?
I'll look it up, said Minnie, and she dug in her backpack.
Aru thought she was going to use her compact, but instead she brought out a Merriam-Webster pocket dictionary.
Seriously? Asked Aru. Of all the things you thought to pack on a quest, you brought a pocket dictionary?
So what? I like being prepared, said Minnie.
What did you pack?
I didn't pack anything, said Aru. Who has time to pack when you're told the world is going to end?
Minnie shushed her.
Dane, she said. It means to do something that one considers beneath one's dignity.
None of those options make sense, said Aru. What if we just try walking in a different direction, like in between the signs?
So they tried, but their feet met a wall of air. Something prevented them from taking a single step that was not in a specific direction. The only place they couldn't access was Dane, because the sign pointed up, and there weren't stairs or anything.
Chitragupta could have told us which way to go, grumbled Aru. We're practically family. He said so himself.
But then we wouldn't.
Yes, I know. Character building, blah, blah. And the world wouldn't be saved.
That's way too much pressure. Are our brains even fully developed? We shouldn't be allowed to make these decisions.
Aru, that's it, said Minnie.
Okay, now I'm worried. None of what I said was good.
We're not smart enough, said Minnie.
Yay?
But we can change that, she said.
Out of her backpack, she pulled out the box of wisdom cookies.
Book cookies? Asked Aru, grimacing.
All right, fine. Gimme.
Minnie looked inside the box, then checked her backpack again.
There's only one in here.
The girls stared at each other for a moment. Minnie's fingers reflexively curled over the cookie. Aru could tell how much it meant to her friend.
It's yours, said Aru. You've got the same soul as Yudhisthira, and he was always known for being the wisest of all the brothers. That cookie has your name all over it. Plus, I don't need more wisdom. I'd explode.
Minnie flushed.
Thanks, Aru.
How long does the wisdom last?
I think only for the duration of the decision-making, said Minnie.
How do you know that?
Because it says so on the back of the box.
Sure enough, the duration of the wisdom cookies was listed alongside the nutritional facts.
Ooh, said Minnie. It has my entire daily serving of potassium and zinc.
Hooray.
Minnie took a bite of the cookie.
What's it taste like? Asked Aru.
Kinda smoky and cold, like snow. I think it's supposed to taste like my favorite book.
What's your favorite book?
Minnie bit into the second half of the cookie.
The Golden Compass.
Never read it.
Really?
Asked Minnie, shocked.
I'll loan you my copy when we get home.
Home. A home that was full of books Aru had never cracked open because her mother always read to her.
Aru had trouble remembering things she read herself,
but if she heard something, she'd never forget it. Maybe that's why her mom had told her so many stories. Her mom might have left her in the dark about being a Pandava, but at least hearing the stories about them had prepared Aru somewhat.
Mom, thought Aru, I promise I'll thank you as soon as I get home.
Oh no, said Minnie.
What? What is it?
Minnie held up her palm to show the symbol there.
Another doomsday squiggle? Asked Aru.
Okay, well, it looks like it too, which would be really bad news, but maybe it means four?
It means two.
No! Betrayal!
Only 2 days left, and the entirety of the Kingdom of Death left unexplored?
Minnie ate the rest of the wisdom cookie.
Feel any wiser? Asked Aru anxiously.
No?
What about warmer, or bloated, like you're full of hot air?
But Minnie wasn't paying attention. She was staring at the three signs.
Dane, she whispered. That's the answer.
Why?
It's kinda like a riddle, said Minnie. The word Dane means to look down on. The arrow pointing up is a trap, because the whole point is that we have to look at what's beneath us. It's like when you have to make a choice you don't want to make, and you feel like you're reluctant to do it.
Whoa, said Aru. You got all that from a cookie?
Sure there isn't any left?
She grabbed the box from Minnie and shook it. Nope. Not even a crumb.
Minnie stuck out her tongue.
At the edge of the Dane sign, a hole formed in the marble floor.
Why is it only opening now? Asked Aru.
Probably because we're looking down and not up?
Both girls peered down the hole. Something glittered far below. A strange fragrance wafted up. It smelled uncannily like Aru's apartment in the museum. Musty fabric, chai, lavender candles, and old books.
Minnie frowned. Let's go in alphabetically, she said.
No way! My name starts with A! It's your kingdom, sorta. You go first.
I'm the one who made sure we could get even this far.
Only because I let you eat the cookie.
Chitragupta gave it to me!
Aru took a deep breath and settled this the only fair and logical way she could imagine.
Nose goes! She screamed, smacking her face.
Minnie, who must have anticipated Aru being sneaky, immediately smacked her face too, except she moved so fast that her glasses flew off her head and fell. Down the hole.
Ugh, said Minnie. You're the worst, Aru.
And with that, she jumped in after them.
25. What meets the eye and what doesn't.
The descent wasn't bad. It was like a long water slide without the water. It dumped them out in a forest. But something was off about this place. Granted, Aru didn't have much experience with forests. Once her mother had taken her to San Francisco. At first it had seemed like it was going to be a boring trip, because they spent the whole morning with the curator of the Asian Art Museum. But after lunch, her mother had taken her to Muir Woods. Walking through it was like a delicious dream. It had smelled like peppermint. The sunlight was soft and feathered, hardly skimming the forest floor because the trees were so thick and tall. But this place, tucked inside a pocket of the Kingdom of Death, didn't have that foresty feel. Aru sniffed the air. There was no perfume of green and wriggling aliveness. No smell of wood smoke or still ponds. It didn't have a smell at all. Minnie toed the ground.
This doesn't feel like dirt.
Aru bent to check it out. She ran her fingers over the floor. It was silk. She walked to one of the trees, planning to snap off a branch and inspect it, but instead walked straight through it.
It's not real, exclaimed Minnie.
She jumped through another one of the trees.
This is amazing!
A small puddle of water caught the light.
What is this going to be? A trampoline?
Minnie laughed, jumping into it. But the second she did, the liquid stuck to her legs. And then it pulled. With every blink, Minnie was vanishing beneath the
quicksand! Screamed Minnie.
She started struggling.
Stop! Shouted Aru. Haven't you seen any movies? Thrashing around is like the fastest way to die. Quicksand, quicksand, quicksand! Moaned Minnie. I don't want to go this way. My body will be preserved forever like those bog mummies. I'll become a Wikipedia page.
You're not gonna die, Minnie. Just stop screaming and let me think for a minute. She was going to reach for a branch to pull out Minnie, but the branches weren't really there. Aru ran through a couple of trees. Maybe there was an actual tree lurking in the midst, but there wasn't.
Aru! Screamed Minnie.
By now she was up to her neck. Any farther and she wouldn't even be able to scream. Her arms waved wildly in the air.
I'm coming, said Aru, running back.
But Aru tripped. She braced herself for a fall, but of course the silky ground was soft. She landed with a light thump. When she looked down, her hands were clutching folds of the dirt.
That's it, whispered Aru.
She lifted some silk off the ground. It came up in a dark, slender rope. Aru dragged it over to Minnie, who by now was buried up to her chin. Minnie grabbed hold of the rope, but the quicksand yanked her under. "No!" cried Aru. She pulled the rope as hard as she could. Under ordinary circumstances, she might not have been able to do it. Under ordinary circumstances, Aru probably would have slipped into the quicksand herself, and both of them would have become dismal Wikipedia pages. But worry for a friend can make ordinary circumstances extraordinary. In that moment, all Aru knew was that Minnie was her first true friend in a long time, and she would not, could not lose her. Minnie gasped as Aru heaved her onto the silky ground. Aru was shocked. She did it. She saved her. Even though she'd faced down a demon and tricked the seasons, this was the first time she felt like she'd done something magical. Minnie spluttered and coughed. There was a shark down there! She shuddered, then gathered a handful of silk and started toweling off her hair. A shark? And you know what it said to me? It said, "Is it true your sharks don't talk?" I didn't have a chance to answer because you pulled me out so quickly. What kind of thank you is that? Why should I say thank you? Asked Minnie. I knew you could do it. I knew you could do it. Aru bit back a grin. Fine. Next time I'll let you drown a bit longer. No, squeaked Minnie. Drowning is number 3 on my top 10 ways I don't want to die list. Who makes a list of that? Minnie primly straightened her shirt. I find that organizing scary information actually makes me less scared. Once Minnie had finished toweling off, they looked at the path ahead of them. The road that wound through the forest was the same color as the Dane sign. Do you think it goes to another hall? Asked Aru. Maybe? I wish we had a map again, Minnie said, squinting as she studied her hand. Ever since they had arrived in the Kingdom of Death, the Mendi had grown lighter and lighter, as they did naturally because they were not permanent. But now all that remained of the fantastical designs were faint waves on their fingers and the dark Sanskrit numbers on their palms. The forest arced over them. In this place, there was even a sky. But given how topsy-turvy everything was, Aru wondered whether it was a sea. Maybe here the moon really was made of cheese. Does this place feel familiar to you? Asked Minnie. She rubbed her arms as if she had goosebumps. No? Aru would have remembered a place that looked like this. But she couldn't deny the smell that she had caught right before they jumped into Dane. It was the smell of home. She was still thinking about this when she experienced a very rude awakening. Every tree they had seen so far had been intangible, so Aru had walked straight through them. She was passing through one of the trunks, not really minding where she was going, when she smacked her nose. Hard. What the? She muttered, glaring. She had run into the side of a cliff. A rocky black wall glistening with water. No, it was a hard waterfall. She reached out to touch it carefully. It seemed like actual water, cold and cascading through her fingers. But the minute she tried to put her hand through it, it pushed back, as firm as stone. Yet another illusion, said Aru, except this one's got substance to it. Beside her, Minnie paled. Aru, that's it! I think I know where we are! Minnie closed her eyes and put her hand on the waterfall. She groped around, and then her hand abruptly stopped moving. She must have found what she was looking for, because her eyes opened suddenly. Behind the waterfall, Aru heard the faintest unclasping sound, like a key sliding into a lock. The next instant, the waterfall swung open. It hadn't been a waterfall at all, but a secret door. Just like in the stories about the Palace of Illusions, breathed Minnie.
Is this your wisdom cookie speaking, or you?
Me, said Minnie, frowning. I only remember the story because of the carnival my mom took me and my brother to. She brought it up when we went to the place with all the weird mirrors.
You mean the funhouse?
Right, that. She told me the Pandavas had lived in a place like that. A famous demon king, who was also a really great architect, made it for them.
Aru remembered hearing that story. In exchange for their sparing his life, the demon king, Mayasura, agreed to build the Pandava brothers the most beautiful palace the world had ever seen. It came with illusions that befuddled the mind and heightened the senses. They were so convincing that when an enemy prince, who was also the Pandava's cousin, came to visit, he fell through a floor tile that was actually water, and he nearly broke his foot, jumping into a pool that turned out to be cleverly polished sapphires.
What if this is the original palace? Asked Minnie. Maybe that's how I knew how to open the door.
So what if it is? It's not like we'll remember anything about it from our former lives. It's just a house, no big deal. And I doubt it's the real Palace of Illusions. What would it be doing here anyway? We didn't reside in the Kingdom of Death.
Minnie frowned. Uncle Chitragupta said we'd find all kinds of things here, including forgotten things. Maybe when people forgot about the palace, it moved to the forest?
It's a house, not a person, said Aru.
But Minnie didn't look so convinced. The path led to the waterfall door, and there were no other routes around it.
We have to go through the palace, don't we? She asked, her voice barely above a whisper. I really don't want to. I couldn't even get through the Haunted Mansion in Disney World. My dad had to take me out.
Well, if we have to go through it, it's going to be fine. It's a palace. It might be a bit weird inside, but we've seen a lot of weird stuff on this trip. Like a magical door crocodile and door of death dogs. And I don't even want to think about what else. You can get past a couple of stones, some statues, and some optical illusions. Trust me.
Minnie took a deep breath.
Fine, if you say so.
Plus, think about it this way. If there are any enchantments inside, you have the magical compact. Just swing it around and look at things out of the corner of your eye.
Minnie nodded, threw back her shoulders, and pushed open the door. Aru walked in after her. The stone door closed behind them, cutting off the sound of the waterfall and leaving a deep silence. Was this how everyone had once entered the palace of the Pandavas? For a moment, Aru wondered about the life she had apparently lived thousands of years ago. How many times had her former self run into the hard waterfall? Or maybe Arjuna had never hit his head on anything. It didn't make any sense how they could share the same soul and be completely different. Beneath her feet, dust caked the palace floor. She caught the sheen of lapis lazuli tiles that must have been brilliant in their day. Now they were cracked. The air had that unstirred quality of an abandoned house. Or a mausoleum.
I bet it was really pretty once, said Minnie.
Aru grimaced as she looked around her. Some dust, at least she hoped it was dust and not pulverized skeletons or something equally gross, fell onto her shoulder from the crumbling ceilings.
Yeah, once.
Huh, what's this? Asked Minnie.
She touched a cobwebbed torch on the wall.
Aru wondered if this was going to be one of those Indiana Jones moments, and now the floor was going to open up beneath them.
Instead, the torch glowed.
Minnie, what's this is never a good question in a movie.
But she didn't get a chance to finish.
Around them, the air began to crackle. The shadowy palace halls brightened as torches flickered to life along all the walls. And then the sound of cantering hooves thundered through the palace. For one sparkling moment, Aru wondered whether Indra's seven-headed horse was coming to save them and get them out of here. Instead, a herd of horses charged toward them. If a herd of horses were charging at her in any other situation, Aru would have turned and run. But these horses weren't like any she'd ever seen. For one thing, they were made of rose petals. Their eyes were blood-red blossoms, and their floral manes were the luminous pink of dawn. When they opened their mouths to neigh, Aru saw that their teeth were tightly furled white buds. But when they got about a foot away from Aru, they burst. Petals rained down. In their wake, she could smell wildflowers and fresh rain. It would have been pleasant if it hadn't been for the walls shaking soon after, and the deep, dark sound echoing around them.
Who dares disturb the peace of this home?
26. My home, not yours. No touchy. Technically, it's our home, said Aru. Maybe we shouldn't, started Minnie. Suddenly, both of them were slammed hard against a wall by an unseen wind.
Your home,
repeated the voice. It took a moment for Aru to realize that it wasn't some dude skulking in the shadows who was talking, but the palace itself. It shook with laughter. More dust, or pulverized skeletons, Aru was beginning to think was more likely, fell down on them. Hundreds of lights flashed on the walls. It looked a little like a movie theater coming to life. Except here, the broken tiles began to arrange themselves. They rolled across the floor until they formed a smile. Two bright braziers sparked alive, slanting into eyes.
I do not think so, said the palace. This was once the seat of the Pandava brothers and their wife, Draupadi. You mere pinches of mortality are nothing compared to them. You cannot possess me.
All the torches in the palace guttered at once. It was hard to remember that this was the Palace of Illusions, and not of, say, nightmares. Aru took Minnie's hand and tried to reassure her. Whatever happens, it's not real.
I think you should leave, little pinches, said the palace.
The ceiling quaked. Wind blew in their faces. The ground beneath them glowed strangely, as if they were standing over an aquarium. An illusion flickered to life on the ground, showing a rocky cliff that dropped off into the sea. It's not real. It's not real, whispered Aru under her breath. A gigantic shark swam up right under her feet. It grinned and looked like it was saying, Come on in, the water's great. Aru squeezed her eyes shut and gripped Minnie's hand even harder. We're not going anywhere, called out Minnie. She had to draw in great big gulps of air to get the words out. Don't you recognize us? Shouted Aru. It was easier to be brave, or fake bravery, with her eyes closed. At least that way she didn't have to see the shark. She was pretty sure it was tying a napkin around its neck, clapping its fins and saying, Dinner, dinner, dinner. We are the Pandavas, said Minnie. We've got the souls of Yudhisthira and Arjuna. What? Don't say that. It sounds like we've kidnapped them. I mean, shouted Minnie, we're the daughters of the Dharma Raja and Lord Indra. The wind stopped roaring. The fires sputtered to smoldering embers. When Aru opened her eyes, the floor was just that, a floor.
You lie, hissed the palace.
The actual words came from every direction. She even saw letters bubbling up like blisters on her skin. L-I-A-R. She winced, but the red marks vanished. Just another illusion.
When the Pandavas left,
said the palace,
they bade farewell to all except the one thing that had given them shelter and watched over them as they slept. Was my beauty not enough to tempt them to stay? My illusions were forged of the same stuff that made up their dreams. I was their dream home, literally. But still they left. So why should I believe they would come back?
The palace smelled sour, as if it was sulking. Aru didn't think it was possible to sympathize with a palace, and yet she did. Before now, she had never thought about how a house must feel when its family stuck a for sale sign on the lawn and then packed up and left. If the palace could be sad, did that mean her apartment missed her? Now she really wanted to run to the museum and hug a pillar.
I'm so sorry you felt left behind, said Minnie carefully. Maybe we left you a note? But I promise we're not lying about who we are. You see, we've got urgent business and need to get through the other side of the palace.
Why?
It asked. The ceiling caved inward. When Aru squinted, it looked a bit like a frowny face, and then it blazed red. Maybe not a frowny face, maybe more of a fury face.
Because we need to save the world, said Aru. If there's no world, what's going to happen to you?
A wall of fire sprang up in front of Aru.
You're horrifyingly rude, said the palace. Is this what I have missed out on during all these millennia in the depths of Death's kingdom? Well then, I'm not sorry. Not a whit.
Please, said Minnie. Just let us through. This was the only way in from the forest.
Ah, I miss my true forest, said the palace fondly. I am hewn from its trees. Sand from those puddles sealed my cracks. My woods once wriggled with deplorable things. When the Pandavas decided to build their home, the creatures were banished. The great architect, King Mayasura's life was spared in exchange for building them a palace the likes of which no one had ever seen. Me.
The wall of fire disappeared, revealing a most magnificent hall. Tall living statues studded with jewels paced back and forth. One of them had a glass belly that housed a miniature library.
The eldest Pandava liked to read,
the palace recalled wistfully.
But he had trouble choosing a room to read in, so I made sure his bed could float anywhere and books could be brought to him.
The walls were covered with thinly beaten gold, and the floor was a marvel of mirrors and sapphire pools.
The youngest liked to admire himself, so I made sure there were plenty of places where he might catch glimpses of his beauty.
A lush garden dripped from the ceiling, eclipsing the previous illusion. Glass vials and sheaves of parchment dotted a work table.
The second youngest liked the sciences, so I made sure there was always an abundance of living things to study.
A stadium unfurled in front of them. It contained spinning wheels, moving targets, and racetracks that curved from the floor to the ceiling.
The second eldest liked to test his strength, so I made sure he had challenging arenas.
The next image showed a mishmash of all the items from the previous illusions.
The third eldest liked a little of everything, so I made sure nothing escaped his interest.
The final image was a room full of soft light.
And wise and beautiful Draupadi, wife to the five brothers. What she wanted most of all was peace. I tried to grant her wish, but the closest I could muster was light.
The images faded.
How fitting that I am called the Palace of Illusions when all I have left are memories. Perhaps memories are the grandest illusion of all,
said the palace quietly, and then in a voice even softer and smaller.
In my memories, they seemed so happy with me.
Pity twisted through Aru, but it was quickly erased when the twin braziers flickered back to life.
And now you wish to spoil those memories too? Taunt me with the idea that the Pandavas have returned?
We didn't mean to hurt your feelings, said Minnie. Her eyes shone. Not returned, so much as been reincarnated, said Aru. There's a difference. I didn't even remember that we had a house. Honest. The house shivered.
You, it started sniffling, are saying that I'm not worth remembering?
No, Aru winced. Not at all. Minnie scowled at Aru and bent down to rub one of the tiles like you would a dog's belly. No, no, she said soothingly. What she means is, we don't really have much of a memory about our past lives. We didn't even know we were Pandavas until, like, last week.
I have never let anyone pass these halls that was not a Pandava or a guest of a Pandava.
More dust fell on Aru. Yup, it was definitely pulverized bone. She tried not to gag. A scroll of parchment unraveled from the ceiling. Thousands upon thousands of names were written on it. The ink dripped down the paper before puddling on the floor.
Ah, so sorry, but you're not on the list, said the palace.
There was a malicious tinge to its voice now.
So I suppose you'll just have to prove that you really are Pandavas.
Once more, the house shook. The walls flashed with different colors. No longer was Aru staring at the ruins of a palace. Now she was in the middle of a forest. But it wasn't real. The illusion, as she had to keep reminding herself, felt so real that the grass even prickled beneath her feet. Fireflies drifted drowsily through the evening air. The jungle had that smell of overripe fruit that had fallen and gone uneaten. Whoa, she breathed, turning to Minnie. But Minnie wasn't there. Hey, where? Aru spun around wildly. She was all alone. Around her, the forest began to laugh. Leaves fell down on her slowly. Cruelly. Each leaf that touched her skin left a tiny wound the size of a paper cut.
I told you that if you wanted to get through me, you'd have to prove yourself a Pandava,
murmured the forest that was not a forest but a palace.
Arjuna was the greatest hero who ever lived.
Aru thought that was a rather sweeping statement to make. The greatest? Really? In front of her, a bow and arrow appeared on the ground. Oh, no. She didn't even know how to use a bow. Did you string it? Notch it? Aru cursed. She should have paid more attention when she was watching Lord of the Rings last week. Maybe if she'd looked at how Legolas used a bow instead of, you know, just looking at Legolas, she would have been a little bit more prepared.
Are you truly a Pandava, brother? Or are you just a liar?
What do you want me to do with this? Aru said, gesturing at the bow.
Simple, little pinch of mortality. If you aim true, you'll escape this illusion. If you don't, well, you'll die. Don't worry. We can make this whole ordeal go much more quickly. Watch.
As he spoke, the fireflies began to grow brighter. Heat filled the air. Aru's eyes widened. The fireflies were made of actual fire. 27. And then came the horde of Godzilla-sized fireflies. Silence settled over the forest. Minnie! Screamed Aru. Was this illusion different from the others? Was it a physical thing or something living in her mind? Aru squeezed her eyes shut, then opened them quickly. Nothing. She thought the illusion would be like a creepy, glitchy thing, as if one moment she'd see the illusion, and the other moment she'd see the reality. Minnie? Aru called again. On the ground, the bow and arrow taunted her. Hey, Palace, she called. If you let me out, I'll wash your windows. Still no reply. Fine, roll around in filth for all I care. Something burned her toe. Ow! It was one of the fireflies. At first, the fireflies had simply floated through the darkness, heating the air. But then they'd begun to land on the boulders and the branches of the giant forest. Now it looked like a golden net had been stretched over the forest, but it was eerily still. The smell of something charred hit her. A burnt circle appeared right next to her toe. Oh no, said Aru softly. Whatever the fireflies touched, they kindled. At her back, she heard crackling, the sound of brush catching fire. Smoke plumed into the air. The fireflies reflected off the shiny forest leaves, looking like possessed Christmas lights. Aru swiped the bow and arrow from the ground and took off running. The fireflies followed close behind. A flame nearly scorched her ear. Aru dove behind a rock and peeked out. The forest was on fire. Literally, metaphorically, all the alleys. She fumbled with the bow and arrow. They were abnormally heavy and awkward. The arrow alone must have weighed as much as her backpack on a Monday before Christmas break. There, she grunted, is no way this is going to work. Finally, she slid the arrow into place. This shouldn't be difficult. Katniss and Legolas made it look easy enough. She plucked at the heavy string. It cut her fingers. Ow, 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 she wailed, dropping the bow and arrow. What did the palace mean? If you aim true, you'll escape. Aim at what? She looked around, scanning the tops of the forest trees and the branches underneath. But there was no target. How could she possibly be like Arjuna? She couldn't even pull a bowstring, let alone do one of his famous feats, like shoot an arrow through the eye of a fish just by looking at its reflection. Even the ping pong ball in her pocket was of no help in this situation. Exit. If I were an exit, where would I hide? She was beginning to feel uncomfortably warm. Was that a swarm of insects coming her way? Or was it just her imagination? Aru snuck a second glance from her hiding spot behind the rock. Nope, it was definitely not her imagination. The fireflies had converged into what looked like one great, big, glowing bug. It pulsed with fire. With one flap of its wings, three trees turned to smoking ash. Aru uttered a word that at school would have gotten her thrown into detention for a week. The firefly nightmare monstrosity flew closer. Aru bolted from the rock and sped into the deep thicket of trees. The shadows of a thousand fires loomed in front of her. Heat glowed on her back, and still Aru ran. She flew past a valley of boulders and stumpy trees and found a stream flowing from the mouth of a cave. Aru jumped into the water and winced. This was the problem with creeks. They looked so inviting, but beneath the water, the ground was always sharp and slick. Jagged rocks punctured the bottoms of her feet as she waded toward the cave. Once she got there, Aru plopped down on the cold, wet floor of the cave to catch her breath. She could still hear the bzzz, bzzz of insect wings nearby. How awful is my life that I'm hoping for a giant fiery toad to come and eat the giant fiery fly, she muttered. She examined the soles of her feet. For an illusion, this was sickeningly realistic. Her physical condition, cut up skin and a heart trying to break free of her ribs, didn't feel fake. And even if all of this was fake, Not even her fake self wanted to be the victim of a giant fake bug. If Minnie were here, she could make an enchantment of a giant shoe and squash the